I'm Rick Ganley. This is NHPR. All this week on Morning Edition, we're bringing you a week-long series on the heroin and opioid addiction crisis. We're calling it Hope on the Front Lines. We're traveling across the state and talking with people at the ground level that are trying to make a difference. Yesterday, we sat in on a recovery coach training in Concord. And this morning, we continue our look at this peer-to-peer support model by meeting the recovery coaches taking on the crisis in Manchester, where more than 100 people died of overdoses last year.
And I hope everybody didn't load up on Red Bulls, because that is going to be a problem.
Despite those grim numbers, it is a surprisingly positive atmosphere here on a Thursday night at Hope for New Hampshire Recovery. It's a substance abuse recovery center in the heart of New Hampshire's largest city. Walking in, I see walls covered with messages of encouragement and support.
You can always tell when somebody comes in, like, hey, you having a bad day? What's up? You know, and they get you out of it. Your other peers get you out of that.
Kelly Riley is the recovery coach supervisor. There are about 20 paid coaches on staff here, along with another roughly 15 volunteers. There's a rotation, so there's always at least one coach on call for those who come through the door or respond to calls from out in the community. I've only been here a few minutes when a call comes in fact. Someone's looking for help just a few blocks down the street at the city's central fire station.
We, no matter what, as recovery coaches, we walk over there, we'll get them. So we're going to take a walk over there.
We step out into a city that's been ravaged by this heroin and opioid addiction crisis. Walking along Pine Street, Riley explains this particular call is part of a new program, Operation Safe Station.
You can go to any fire station and go there and ask for help.
How many people have done that so far?
Oh, we've had at least 70 calls. Not everyone has ended up with us, but we've kept several people. So as you can see, the ambulance is right there. This person has either overdosed or close to overdose, you know.
There's an EMT waiting outside as we walk up to the fire station.
So like this person here, we'll pick them up. We'll bring it back and we'll talk to them over there. And start seeing, you know, what's going on, how you doing, what's your life like, you know, what are you addicted to. All right, I'll stay right here and then I go talk to him and see what's going on.
A few minutes later, she comes back out with a man in his early 20s. He's wearing a tattered black T-shirt and jeans, and he's carrying his belongings in a duffel bag. It turns out he's been to the recovery center before.
I remember seeing you, and, you know, we can get you on the path to... Just knowing that you just went there, you're probably going to feel a little teeny bit better because you're doing a little bit, you know, for yourself.
Walking back, he opens up about his one-year-old daughter. He wants to get better for her, he says, but he's never been able to admit he needed help.
Well, you'll meet 100 other people that are the same way. Like, it's hard to ask for help.
Back at the recovery center, Riley gets him settled in.
I'm going to put you right over here. This is what we call the little cube here, okay? So I'm going to put you here. I'm going to go get one of the other coaches. So just get comfortable. There's like coffee right there if you want to have a cup of coffee.
He meets with a coach, and they start mapping out a recovery plan.
So we have a meeting coming on over here?
No, I already know.
That's all my fault.
The center is filling up quickly for tonight's Heroin Anonymous meeting. And looking around, it's impossible to tell the difference between the coaches and the members. And there's a reason for that.
We've all done those things, steal, lie, cheat, to get to what we needed, you know? So it's nice to be able to share that with somebody to say, hey, you don't have to feel alone, because we've all been there. We've all done that.
Like many coaches, James Holloway was once an addict. And it wasn't that long ago he was in the same place as those he's now helping. Now that he's clean, Holloway is helping others as a coach, but he's also reconnected with his family and is able to spend the weekends with his daughters.
The blessings that have come out of it are just like tenfold compared to my life before.
It's a familiar story here.
To be able to say, you know, been there, done that, you know, it's a very powerful tool. I wouldn't be able to do this if I wasn't able to share my story.
David Cody has been in long-term recovery for 25 years. He's another recovery coach on staff.
The rule here is 80-20. So we do 20% and the member does 80%. So I'll put them in front of a phone. I will give them phone numbers. But for the most part, they're the ones doing the calling.
But finding treatment isn't always easy. Many of the people coming in don't have insurance.
Obviously, we want to help people when they need it. And that window of opportunity is very narrow. So if we can get them on a wait list and keep them involved and keep them active, that keeps that window open that much longer.
and the need keeps growing. When the center first opened last summer, a few hundred people would show up in a month. Now it's upwards of 2,000.
I have seen a lot more people come in, and I see a lot of young people come in, which is, you know, is amazing. Because I figure if somebody can come in at 20 years old or 25 years old and find recovery, how many years of misery have we avoided for them, or have they avoided for themselves?
Later, I meet Coach Brian Patriquin. He's been in recovery for about 5 years.
Most people don't know what a recovery coach is. It's just a term that everybody throws around because that's really what we do, right? It's just we help coach, we encourage, we empower, we empathize with the individual who's seeking help.
So I'm going to show you like what this is back here.
In the back of the center, there's a room called Amber's Place. It's a space in the building where members can stay while waiting to get into treatment. Recovery coach supervisor Kelly Riley walks me through.
We have capacity for 16 we can have here, but and we were very close to that. Day before yesterday, we had like 8 pickups, like 8 people come in.
How long do they stay on average? I mean, is there an average stay?
We like to get you out between 3 to 5 days.
There are mattresses spread out across the floor, and it's where the man we picked up earlier in the evening will spend the night. People are free to go, and some do leave, sneaking out the back door. But for those who stay, there's always someone here to talk to.
Because we don't have any kind of funding, we rely on people to give their time, to be able to basically sit and listen to someone. And you see so much of that. People just want to talk to somebody that's not going to judge them.
And like others here, Riley is no stranger to addiction. She's in recovery, and she lost her son to a heroin overdose.
When I talk about it, which I talk about it a lot, I can get very emotional because it's a very emotional thing. We're so used to not showing our emotions, and people will be like, wow, I know what that feels like.
Recovery coaching isn't for everyone. Many do get burned out. David Cody, one of the coaches, says you've just got to focus on the small victories.
It really is about, I got somebody a phone number to a treatment center and he got on a wait list. That's something he didn't have when he came in. Or, you know, I found somebody a safe place to live for the night.
And there's good news for the center. This summer, it will move into a larger space in a former furniture building in the city, where there will be more beds and housing for those in recovery.